Fair starting Saturday, August 13th at 10 a.m. and ending Sunday, August 14th, 2016 at 4 p.m. at the Oregon State Fairgrounds in Salem. For the first time ever, Oregon's producers will be able to display live plants at the Cannabis Fair. Over 60 groves will be showcased this year, and there will be awards for the winning plants in several categories. Again, that's the Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair starting Saturday, August 13th at 10 a.m. and ending Sunday, August 14th at 4 p.m. at the Oregon State Fairgrounds, 2330 17th Street, Northeast in Salem. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Welcome to The Dirtbag on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Gene Bradley. I'm filling in for Glenn today. Glenn, we hope, is somewhere out in the sunshine. But in his absence, we have two guests to talk about topics that are on many gardeners' minds right now in Portland: ripening fruit and getting your garden ready for fall. Bob Hatton is going to join us from the Portland Fruit Project. And second half of the show, Weston Miller will be here from OSU Extension to talk about the Master Gardeners Program and answer questions about planning the fall and winter garden. So, Bob.
Hi.
Welcome to KBOO. Really appreciate you giving us your time today. Bob's a program manager of the Portland Fruit Tree Project. How long have you been with the Fruit Tree Project, Bob?
I've been with the Portland Fruit Tree Project since September 2009, when I started as an AmeriCorps member.
Wow. Well, that's wonderful. Right now is, as they say, your peak season, I suspect.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, it's a very busy time of year. It's lots of fruit trees around the city that are ripe and dropping fruit.
Well, can you tell us how this project started? And it started about 10 years ago, and where you are today?
Sure. Thanks for having me on. So in 2006, our executive director, Katie Kolker, she was in AmeriCorps at the time, and she and another friend of hers just noticed lots of fruit trees around the city that were dropping fruit, going to waste. And they also knew from their work with food access that there are lots of folks that can't afford fresh, locally harvested organic produce, especially fruit, which is in short supply oftentimes at local food pantries. And so they began to organize some harvesting parties, and immediately it was very popular. The tree owners were happy to see their fruit trees be harvested and not drop their fruit on the sidewalk, creating a mess, attracting pests, and to know that it was going to folks that could use it. And food pantries are happy to have more fruit coming in. And lots of volunteers were eager to harvest fruit in their own neighborhoods.
So you started with two neighborhoods in Northeast Portland. What's the extent of the area you cover now?
Yeah, so very quickly word spread, and for the last few years we've been harvesting fruit trees all over Portland. So we register fruit trees that are in the city of Portland, and so those trees are all eligible for harvest and for tree care. And we also do a handful of large orchard harvests outside of the city.
That's great. How many people participate in this every season?
Well, we have about 130 volunteers that are in leadership roles or long-term volunteer positions, and but over 1,000 volunteers total throughout all of our programs participate.
Wow, that's a lot of people. How much fruit do you gather in this effort?
So, la- Yeah. So last year we organized 115 harvesting events where we harvested 62,476 pounds of fruit.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we also had the opportunity to do a one-day butternut squash field glean, and we did 27,000 pounds of squash in a single day.
That's a lot of squash.
That's a lot of squash.
I thought my garden patch had a lot, but that's a lot more than that. So,
yeah.
So what happens to the fruit and the produce that you gather? It goes to your partners?
Yeah, so at the harvesting parties, at least half of the fruit is donated to local food pantries or food banks, and the other half is split amongst the volunteers that come out to the harvest. For the large orchard harvest, the poundage is so great that the volunteers don't take nearly as much as the half this year. But so last year we donated 44,560 pounds of fruit. So we distribute to food pantries all across Portland. And for the larger harvests, we partner directly with Oregon Food Bank so they can help out with logistics, with picking up the totes, bringing up their box trucks, things like that.
So part of your mission statement is to increase the equitable access to healthful foods. It sounds like you're doing quite a bit of that. But the other part of your mission statement is really interesting also. It's to strengthen opportunities by empowering neighbors to share in the bounty and care of rubber and fruit trees. And that's such an interesting kind of thing. You're talking about neighbors, and you're talking about empowering them to not only gather the bounty, but also to care for it. So what are your programs besides the harvest?
In addition to the harvesting program, we also have a community orchards program where we partner with other nonprofits, community associations, city parks to develop and maintain publicly accessible orchard sites. And so at each of those sites, we're working with volunteers in that community and hoping to build local leadership and knowledge so that those folks can over time really take over the management of the orchard, gaining the knowledge and skills needed to care for those trees and harvest them as they come to maturity. That volunteer empowerment piece is really crucial to what we're trying to do. We try to avoid a kind of top-down model as much as possible and really have community-inspired and community-influenced design to our programs as much as possible.
I just think it's wonderful to talk about it in terms of neighbors sharing the harvest. I just think that's wonderful. Could you talk a little bit about a couple of these programs, the Tree Stewardship Program? How you can register a fruit tree registry. How does that work if I have a fruit tree and I'd like
sure.
to share that harvest?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the first step in our process is for tree owners who have a fruit tree or fruit trees that they are not able to harvest all of the fruit, and maybe it's not every year, but at least some years where there's such a bounty that you don't have the time or the physical ability or the tools to get to it. You can register your tree with Portland Fruit Tree Project, and we have a registration form on our website, or we're happy to send one in the mail via hard copy. And once the tree is registered, we'll follow up as soon as possible with some informational materials, some tips on how to tell when the fruit's ripening up, some tree care tips. Each harvest season, we ask that our tree owners try to give us about 2 weeks' notice as to when they think the fruit will be ripe for picking, so that we have time to send someone out to take a look at the tree, gauge the quality and quantity of fruits, what size ladders do we need, how many volunteers, and then hopefully we can schedule a harvesting party. But we can't guarantee that we can get to all of our registered trees each year. We're trying to get to as many as possible.
Right. And how do your tree care teams work?
Yeah. So for our registered tree owners, they can apply to host tree care teams or tree care workshops at their house. And so each fall, we send out that application to our tree owners, and we get as many of those sites plugged into our tree care programs as possible. For the tree care teams program, we have about 50 volunteers engaged in that program, where we have teams of 8 to 15 volunteers. Each team has two tree care team co-leaders who are more experienced volunteers who can lead their team through each season's organic fruit tree care topic while performing that care on a cluster of our registered fruit trees. These tree care team members and leaders commit to 10 three-hour sessions over the course of the year, where they're visiting each site at least four times, with a winter pruning visit, a spring pest and disease management, summer pruning, and then a fall pest and disease assessment and cleanup session.
Wow. So if I, 25 years ago, planted a plum tree and now I can't quite get anything above 8 feet and I also can't take much care of the tree, you're really there to share that, not only the bounty, but also the responsibility for that tree if I register with you.
Yeah, and you know, we are able to harvest. The harvesting program is our largest program, and we're able to harvest a lot more trees than we're able to care for. So it is a relatively small percentage of our registered trees that we're able to plug into our tree care programs. And so we really try to encourage our tree owners, if they're physically able and they have the time, to come out to our tree care workshops, come out to our community orchard work and learn events. Those are all free for tree owners.
So yeah, you can come and learn how to do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's great. You also have education as far as how to handle the produce, how to do canning and fruit preservation and things like that.
Yeah, so currently the food education program is on hiatus as we're kind of thinking about the best path forward for making that the most successful program that it can be. But yes, historically we've had a food preservation workshop series where we have volunteers that teach folks how to make the bounty of harvest season last year round. Currently we're putting our energy around that into these developing these fruit information cards, which we have in both Spanish and English. We're hoping to get translated in other languages, and these have some nutritional information about the fruit, a simple recipe, and some tips for what to do if maybe there's a fruit type that you get access to at a food pantry or at a harvest that you don't know what to do with, like a quince or a persimmon or cornelian cherries.
Right, exactly. That's great. I was talking to a friend of mine this weekend about having you on, and they were saying, oh, well, we're very close to one of their community orchards over in Sabin. So how many orchards do you have, like these community orchards?
Yeah, so currently we have five community orchard sites. There's the Sabin Orchard in Northeast, the Green Thumb in Southeast, Fruits of Diversity in North Portland, Gabriel in Southwest, and our newest orchard is the Park Rose Community Orchard in Outer Northeast.
So how do you get the land and put this all together?
Each orchard site is a little bit different. With the Sabin site, there were some folks that were involved in the Sabin Community Association that approached us about turning a vacant plot of land into this community orchard site, and that's kind of how that started. And that land is technically owned by PBOT, Portland Bureau of Transportation. And so kind of those have been our two partners there. With Green Thumb and Gabriel, those are both city park land, Portland Parks and Rec. And so our primary partner at those sites is Portland Community Gardens. And we have a five-year contract currently to maintain and harvest the trees at each of those sites.
Do you also give advice or education about what kinds of fruit trees people should consider planting?
Yeah, we have a workshop devoted to that topic in the spring, and we also talk about that at our community orchard sites and when we're doing community orchard design sessions. But if folks call on the phone and have questions about fruit tree selection, we try to help them as much as we can.
Right, because that's the one question everybody wanted me to ask today, is like, what kind of fruit tree should I get for my backyard?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, there's lots of fruit trees that grow here, that grow well here in Portland, but some of them can be quite challenging due to pest and disease issues. So if you're looking for a fruit tree that is kind of low maintenance and upkeep, I encourage folks to consider some of the more unusual or less common fruit types, perhaps. Persimmons are great. They have very little as far as pest and disease issues, and they're also another benefit. They're kind of a late season fruit when a lot of the other fruit at farmers markets and things is no longer available. And then kind of the close runner-up, I would say, was fig trees, which are really easy to grow. They're very forgiving. If you make bad pruning cuts, you can really hack them back, and they're quite resilient.
That sounds promising.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask you about some of your volunteer opportunities, because you just have a whole array of things that people can volunteer to do, as well as harvest the fruit. A couple of them are quite intriguing. What does a tree scout do?
So a tree scout, these folks, they go out in their neighborhood looking for fruit trees that may be abundant and underutilized, and they talk to the tree owner, or they knock on the door to try to talk to the resident to see if they are sharing, or if they're currently harvesting all the fruits, and if not, if they'd be interested in sharing that harvest with Portland Fruit Tree Project.
Wow, that's great. And the other one that really caught my eye was a fruit monitor. Does that come with a hat or something?
You get a T-shirt.
We don't currently have hats.
But the fruit monitors, we train those folks in July, and they serve a vital part of the harvest coordination process. So as I mentioned before, when our registered tree owners give us 2 weeks' notice, we send someone out to do a site visit. And if it were just staff and interns here at the office making trips all around Portland, that would eat up quite a lot of time. And so we've been engaging volunteers in their own neighborhoods. And so a fruit monitor may do site visits kind of in their neighborhood and adjacent neighborhoods. And we'll send them a request when we get a ripe tree that comes in for them to go check out the site. And they report back with some notes on where the tree is as far as ripeness, the quality of fruit, the quantity, how many volunteers we need, all that kind of thing.
That's great. This is such a wonderful and extensive program. I have to ask, how are you funded? How do you get the financial support that you need to run this program?
Yeah, so about half of our budget is through grants, and there's a number of foundations that support our work. And then there's also East Portland Action Plan and East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District that are two of our public or semi-public funders. We also have an Orchard Banquet Series, which is going on now, where we have events the next three Sundays. One of our registered tree owners has an orchard, each of the banquets is hosted at one of our registered tree owners' homes that has a lovely orchard setting, and we have local chefs that donate their time to prepare a unique fruit-inspired meal. And they're really lovely events. And so those have been a really successful fundraising element for us. We do have seats available at our August 21st banquet currently.
Do you also take donations?
Indeed, we do take donations.
You'll accept money?
Yeah, of course.
How can people get in touch with you if they wanted to find out more about it or donate or volunteer? How can they reach you?
Yeah, thanks. Absolutely. Yeah, so there's lots of ways to support the work of Portland Fruit Tree Project. And on our website at portlandfruit.org, we have lists of upcoming events, ways to support our work, and other volunteer opportunities.
And do you have a phone number and a website we could just tell people over the air?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Our phone number at the office is 503-284-6106.
And do you have a website where they can... What's your web address?
The website is www.portlandfruit.org.
That's pretty easy to remember. So we also gave that to our receptionist if anybody wants to call in and get that. So 10 years, and you've grown tremendously. What are your ambitions for this program? How do you see this going in the next 10 years, say?
Well, that is a tough question. I mean, there are thousands of fruit trees around the city of Portland, and so there continues to be vast potential for organizing volunteers to harvest more of those fruit trees and getting that fruit to folks that can use it. And so I think that we need to continue to be innovative in coming up with new ways to empower folks to harvest that fruit. So one idea I have for the next year is to come up with more of a kind of a toolkit document for homeowners, because there are a lot of folks who they don't know that if they harvest the fruit themselves, there are local food pantries that will accept home harvested produce. And so coming up with a little bit of a toolkit for those tree owners who are able to harvest their trees and to do that themselves and to take that fruit directly to the food pantry to kind of cut us out of the process so that we can harvest more trees. So that's kind of one idea on the burner, but certainly we are also hoping to engage volunteers at the kind of hyper-local level as much as possible. We have two neighborhood harvest coordination teams, one in the Woodstock area and one in the Richmond area, where those folks do a lot more of the harvest coordination process themselves so that we're not doing it here from the central office in Northeast Portland.
Now, if you put Portland Fruit Tree Project in the search box on your computer, you get a lot of interesting hits. I see that Baton Rouge, the city of Baton Rouge, has a little article about you on their website, as sort of a best ideas kind of thing. Do you get a lot of other cities and towns asking how you do this and how to set it up?
Yeah, we do get a lot of inquiries from folks in other cities interested in starting up new projects similar to ours. We helped Salem Harvest get started, and they're thriving, harvesting lots of fruit each year now down in Salem. There's also a group called the Dairy Creek Food Web. I might be getting that name wrong, but they're in the Forest Grove area, and we kind of helped them get started last year. There's Urban Abundance up in Vancouver that we also lent some support to when they were getting their fruit tree program going. But we do get calls from folks all over the country and occasionally internationally who are looking for consultation on how to get a fruit tree project started.
So it would seem that given the focus of neighbors sharing the harvest, that you'd really like people to replicate the program in their own places, as opposed to you sort of expanding your operation throughout the state.
Yeah, that's right. I think, you know, part of our programs, or part of the success of our programs, I think it's very place-based, and I think that to be trying to have a satellite program somewhere else might not necessarily work. I think it needs to be tailored to that community, because they may have different fruit trees and a different population, which wouldn't necessarily be engaged in the same manner.
Right.
Yeah.
You've been doing this program for quite a while now. In fact, I read an interview that you said you were behind the computer more than you'd like to be and not out in the field as much as you'd like to be. Do you see a spiritual dimension to this work? That's an odd question, but I guess it's really not that odd.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, when you're outside, at the sites, harvesting the fruit, planting understory, caring for the trees, interacting with others, it's a great feeling. And I think that there is kind of a spiritual component to connecting people with plants and there's, you know, you could say that there's a language beyond words that maybe happens that we're not always tuned into, but that can be really beautiful when it manifests out there with groups of people in our community orchards or harvesting parties.
That's great. There was a quote about your program in a magazine that wrote about you. It said, the best ideas are always those that seem obvious in hindsight. You know, that's a great quote, because something, two people walk out and see that the fruit sitting on the sidewalk and they know people are hungry. And over the 10 years, you develop a program to bring neighbors together. I mean, we know in this country, we're going to have hungry people still and the need for people to have fresh access to fresh food. And we certainly know that we need to build neighborliness in our communities, that any kind of time we can find to do that certainly is great. So I just salute the work you do, and I thank you for talking to us today. This has been really a pleasure, and I hope listeners, if you're interested in supporting this or volunteering for this, Bob, could you give us the phone number one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. It's 503-241-0.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes, you still there?
Yeah.
had a moment of, could you repeat that number one more time? Because we sort of
absolutely
lost it.
Absolutely. Yes. The phone number is 503-284-6106.
Well, thank you very much, Bob, for joining us today, and good luck with the harvest, and hope you get to get out and do a little harvest yourself.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
You betcha. Well, now we're going to take a moment and hear a couple of announcements, and then we're going to be joined by our second guest, Weston Miller from OSU Extension.
We're right in the middle of the dirt bag here at KBOO. Thanks for tuning into Community Radio today. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Also by One Green World, a local nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. To order plants or their 2016 color catalog, their website is onegreenworld.com, or you can reach them by phone at 1-877-353-4028. And we'll get back to the dirt bag after a few more notes by Dester Gordon.
Come over here to the right-hand speaker.
KBOO's book and record sale is happening August 13th at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street, starting at noon. Find treasures amongst the stacks of donated items while raising money for KBOO, your very own community radio station.
Friction between the stylus and the record produces a force which makes the arm try to swing towards the record center.
Again, that's KBOO's book and record sale, Saturday, August 13th from noon to 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm now standing in the center, and my voice should be located precisely midway between the speakers.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Gene Bradley. You're listening to The Dirtbag on KBOO FM 90.7, your community radio station in Portland, Oregon. We're talking today to a couple of people about gardening issues. We just heard from Bob Hatton of the Portland Fruit Tree Project. His contact information for the Portland Fruit Tree Project is area code 503-284-6106. And if you needed to get in touch with the Fruit Tree Project, it's info@portlandfruit.org. In just a few minutes, we hope to be joined by Weston Miller. Weston is an OSU Extension Service community and urban horticulturalist. He oversees the Metro Master Gardeners, and he'll be talking to us about planning the fall and winter garden. So we'll be joining you in just a moment. Thanks. And this is Gene Bradley. You're listening to The Dirt Bag. Glenn is gone today, but we have some pretty exciting guests. And we're joined right now in the KBOO studios by Weston Miller, OSU Extension Service community and urban horticulturalist. He's the associate professor of consumer horticulture at OSU.
That's me.
And he is also the host of his own radio show, Grow PDX, on X-Ray Radio. So it's
That's
nice
right.
to have a radio professional joining us today.
It's fun to be here. Thanks for having me.
To cover for Glenn.
Sure.
And, one of your duties as a community and urban horticulturalist is you take care of the Master Gardeners program.
That's true. I manage the Master Gardener program for OSU for Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties.
That's a lot of territory.
It's a lot of territory and a lot of folks. We have something like 500 volunteers. We train about 150 people per year to plug into our public service. Master Gardener volunteers are there to answer people's gardening questions. We have 3 telephone helplines where folks can call in. We're also at a bunch of farmers markets and community events throughout the metro area.
Everywhere I go in Portland, I see the banner, Ask a Master Gardener.
So that's right. Ask a Master Gardener. We're here to provide research-based information for folks' gardening questions and also household pests.
So this program has been going since 1976?
That's correct. The Master Gardener program started in Washington in, I think, 74, and then 76 was adopted here in Oregon. And now it's in all 50 states, plus some provinces in Canada and South Korea.
So how does an ordinary gardener get involved in or enrolled in becoming a Master Gardener?
Well, the Master Gardener training, so the idea is that OSU trains volunteers to in comprehensive sustainable gardening techniques, and our training will be held starting next February. We've got 3 locations, one in Beaverton, one in Oregon City, one in Portland, and folks can sign up if they go to our website, which is metromastergardeners.org. They can find us. We haven't launched registration yet, but they should look for registration somewhere around November. And then it's a 7-week class, in-person training. We have online content. We have a series of workshops. And then we also have a supervised volunteer internships where folks can plug into our service of answering questions, but also we have community gardens. We have plant sales, lots of opportunities for people to plug into meaningful garden-based education.
So is there a commitment, a time commitment when you take this course of study?
There is, yeah. So it's a 56-hour training. We ask that folks complete a 56-hour volunteer internship. There are options available for people to pay a little bit more and to take it without the volunteer option. And then we also have options for people to take the class, low-income folks. We have a fellowship program to give scholarships.
Wow. That sounds like a great opportunity.
It is a great opportunity. It's a lot of fun for folks out there who are gardeners. You might want to meet some other plant people and really get hooked into folks who have a passion for gardening, but also really have a passion for providing research-based information to the community.
And that's the other thing. If you're don't quite have the energy to enroll in this program, you can still get answers to your questions.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the base public service that OSU provides through the Master Gardener program, and we love it when people contact us and ask questions.
So today we have a rare opportunity of asking questions to the Master Gardener here. So if you'd like to call in with your questions at 503-231-8187, our engineer will take your call and get you set up, and we'll ask Weston what the answer is to some of these questions.
Sure, I'm happy to help.
So I love this part of the volunteers. If you call in to a Master Gardener, what you aim to offer is reliable, relevant, and reachable information. That's just great.
That's correct. The idea is there's a lot of information out there, especially in the internet age on the internet, and it's hard to discern what information is truly reliable or not. When folks go to OSU or other land-grant universities, they'll find information that's based in scientific research, and that way they can depend on it, particularly when it comes time to figuring out how to manage pests on the plants or pests in the home and so on.
So if you're thinking of home remedies to solve some pest problem, you actually could get a little more reliable or
We don't encourage folks to use home remedies. We encourage people to, number one, diagnose what a problem is and then understand what the various options are, come up with a goal for what they might want to do, and then figure it out from there.
That's great. Yeah. Now, you also have a speaker series, and last night you were a speaker.
Correct, yeah. So as part of the Master Gardener program, we have what's called chapters. These are independent nonprofit organizations that are there to support the OSU Master Gardener program. And the chapters have their own individual speakers programs. Last night, I made a presentation on fall and winter vegetable gardening at a site out in southeast Portland. So it was a garden tour, in essence, and it was lots and lots of fun.
So one of the problems that I find being a gardener in Oregon is that here it is August, getting on in August, and a lot of my plants are just starting to produce squash and...
Okay, so you're talking about vegetables.
Tomatoes getting red and that kind of thing.
Well, we like to warn people that we live in a cool summer climate, and this year we really get that.
Not last year, but this year.
Yeah, exactly. The last couple of years have been really warm. They've been great tomato years and so on, but this year has really been a cooler summer. I've personally enjoyed that quite a bit.
Me too.
But then, yeah, the tomatoes, the peppers, the eggplants, they're all producing, but they're not quite as robust as previous years. And I was just talking to my farm manager today, and she's found that the tomatoes are a little lacking in flavor this year.
I've had a couple of good ones at the farmer's market, but those are probably grown by pros. So.
Well, they're grown by pros, and oftentimes pros are using high tunnels, so they're increasing the heat quite a bit.
That's the deal.
So
how do you plan succession plantings for fall and overwintering if you still have things going in your garden in August?
That's a really good question. There's a balance. And in general, we recommend folks allocate about half of their space towards cool season crops that they plant in the spring and then again in the late summer for fall harvest. And then they have their summer crops, the traditional tomatoes, cucumbers, things like that, and another half of the garden. If you sort of flop those back and forth over time and then also do crop rotation within crop families to avoid putting the same plants in the same place over and over again, that's the general recommendation that we have.
So self-discipline when it comes to a 20 by 20
plot.
Yeah,
so tomatoes are great, but tomatoes are also really cheap to buy at the farmer's market or grocery store this time of year. So if you want the most bang for your buck in terms of your time and effort, cool season crops are actually a little more expensive at the store. So all the kales, the lettuces, the fresh herbs and things like that, those you can grow more of per year in terms of volume, and then you just get a longer season of harvest as well.
Yeah. If you out there in Radio Land have some questions, gardening questions for Weston, the number is 503-231-8187. We would love to hear your questions.
Please.
So give us a call.
Yeah,
there won't
absolutely
be a quiz today, so this is your chance to get answers to your questions. So.
Yeah.
So at the same time, you're planning succession for fall and winter harvesting. You're also trying to get your garden ready for fall and winter in terms of supplements. And what do you?
All right. So you're sort of asking about the general preparation in a yearly cycle.
Put in your garden to bed, we used to call it.
Okay. Yeah. So towards the end of the season, once you let's just back up to tomatoes, though. So with tomatoes, pretty soon, we have decreasing daylight. They're going to really start to not produce so much. So somewhere around Labor Day, give them a haircut. So cut off all the ends of the vines, go back to sort of where there actually are berries on the fruit, and cut the water now as well. So that'll set your tomatoes up to produce as much as possible for the next little bit. And then eventually, it's mid-September or whenever the sort of you don't get much more out of them, you can pull the tomatoes. What we would recommend in general is to add lime to the soil in the fall. That's going to help to keep the soil pH up a little bit. If folks want to do cover crops, that's certainly one way to go about the winter. You'd want to plant them by about September 30th. Crimson clover would probably be my best recommendation for a winter cover crop. And then the key is to not let that go to seed next year because it can become a weed, but to pull it out or chop it up in March or so next season, and then that'll get your soil ready for the following year. Other ways to go is just to pull your plants out, add a little compost maybe, and then throw some coffee sacks or some straw or some leaves on top just to mulch it, and that way it protects the soil structure through the winter.
So is now a good time, or is the fall, September after Labor Day, a good time to add supplements, kelp and that kind of thing to your soil? Or
Fall would be an okay, good time for lime or any other sort of rock-based fertilizer that mm-hmm. take a while to break down. But I would hold off on anything that's more of like a fertilizer, mm-hmm. like the kelp meal, until next spring when you start preparing the soil then.
It's always so difficult because you never know when it's going to be wet and when you're going to have a dry moment.
Well, that is one of the challenges of gardening in the Northwest during the springtime. And that's why if folks really want to get a jump on early spring gardening, then one approach is to cover garden area with black plastic through the winter, and then you pull it off and voila, it's dry, it's ready to go, it's a little bit warmer
nice
than the
warm.
Soil would be otherwise. Yeah. And then that way you're sort of beating the weather in terms of if it's really saturated and you can't work it.
Sometimes in the spring in Oregon, it's sort of a rush. So how long, if you dig in your supplements in the spring, if you've covered your beds and uncovered them and you dig in your supplements, how long before you can plant after that?
So if you're sort of mixing in cover crops, you want to wait at least a couple of weeks. But if you're just adding like a organic fertilizer, mm-hmm. you could go ahead and plant right away, and you'd want to. But I think the trick is the nutrients from organic fertilizers are not going to be available in the early spring for the crops to use. They need to be broken down by the soil microbes first. So you also might want to water stuff in with fish emulsion or something like that to give it a little bit of boost in the early spring, and then check it after a month. And if the crops have really kicked into gear, then you're probably okay. But if they've not, you can keep sort of feeding them soluble fertilizer on a plant-by-plant basis to get them off to a good start.
Great.
Yeah.
And do you yourself plant from seed, or do you use starts?
Well, it depends on if you're talking about my home garden. I do a couple of vegetables from starts, and it's fairly haphazard, and I just pick up stuff at the local nursery. But I also manage a production farm, and I have a farm manager who makes all the choices. But we start stuff from seed in our own flats and then transplant it out into the garden. By and large, with the exception of like carrots, beets, radishes, arugula, mustard greens, things that really need to be direct seeded, we try to use transplants.
Because that just in Oregon with a shorter season just gives them a chance to get going in time for.
It gives them a bit of a head start. That's all true. And then we cover stuff with row cover fabric to get it off to an even better start. But really, transplants help mostly with weed management because the plants are bigger and it's easier to get in and weed around them.
So let me ask you a few questions about fall
sure.
things.
Sure.
Well, first, let me give you the number again. And anybody's got a question out there, and you must have some questions, 503-231-8187. This is a rare opportunity to ask the master gardener himself these questions. So my question, or one of the questions that was given to me by many people when I told them I was going to talk to you, is can you do onions in the fall? Should you do onion sets, onion seeds?
Okay, so there are some overwintering varieties of onions that you could plant, and you'd want to do that really soon. You could probably also plant another wave of scallions about right now, so green onions. There's also some leeks that will overwinter, but by and large, onions they take a long time to grow, and overwintering onions are going to need to be really aware of weed management and make sure that they don't get overwhelmed with the weeds. But overall, I'd recommend waiting to plant bulbing onions until next spring. And if folks really want some wintertime onion flavor, to go for some chives or garlic chives, which are really easy to grow, and then they'll be able to harvest them a little in the fall and then a little bit next spring as well. And then, speaking of onion family, garlic is definitely something we do recommend planting in the fall. October is the ideal time to plant garlic, and you can find great choices of garlic at all the nurseries around town.
Now, way back in the 70s, when I was a young fellow, there was a book about winter gardening in the Maritime Northwest.
Right.
Do you do much of that in your demonstration gardens, or?
Yeah, so we pull produce from our site year round, more or less. There's a couple of lean months there, but especially if folks do a lot of planting in July and August and September, a lot of that stuff you can harvest it through Thanksgiving or so, and then during the winter, you can get some harvest of kale and whatnot, and then come spring, the kales and the other overwintering brassica family plants will kick into gear and produce lots of florets and lots of leaves that you can eat. And then if folks really want to get into winter edible or eating the winter produce, learn how to identify the winter annual weeds like chickweed. And those provide great nutrition, and they're tasty, and they grow themselves.
So do you offer the master gardeners offer banquets and things to show these things off, or?
No, so at our demonstration gardens, we give away the produce to the food bank, the master gardeners do. Through my farm project, we have a CSA, so we sell produce, and we also sell produce like a CSA to clients. We have about 30 clients, and then we also sell produce to the Southeast Wine Works.
Right. A lot of people at the market seem to be growing things really specifically for Portland chefs. Are you doing specialty crops as well?
Well, we have a good relationship with a chef, and we grow stuff specifically for her, but it's also stuff that we're growing in general on the farm.
Oh. What about people new to Portland? How can they get involved with gardening?
Well, that's a great question. What I would number one recommend, if folks don't have access to a plot, to a piece of land, they could talk to the City of Portland Community Gardens Program or a number of nonprofits that manage community gardens. So folks who are living in an apartment and otherwise don't have a yard. And then if folks do have a yard and they can garden, I think the number one recommendation is to make sure you have enough sun. So about 8 hours of sunlight in June would be good for a vegetable gardening plot. And then soil preparation would be the next thing. This fall, folks could dig in compost, add lime, and then maybe cover it with plastic, and that would be the best way to deal with the weeds. And then I think the most critical thing next would be learn when to plant various kinds of crops. And we have some specific timing based on our wet spring and cool summer. So there's a couple different resources for that. I have a resource through OSU called An Educator's Guide to Vegetable Gardening that has a really good planting table. Portland Nursery has a pretty good planting table as well.
Yeah, I've used theirs for sure. Yeah. It's sort of a philosophical or public policy question,
sure.
I guess, but I'll ask you anyway.
Yeah.
You have all these people who are rumored to be coming to Portland over the next 10 years, and the we don't have that many community gardens. Do you see a real initiative to stake out more public land for people to participate in gardening?
That's a great question. Five, 6 years ago, community gardening was really a popular topic, and the city of Portland did a great job in expanding the number of holdings that they have where people are doing community gardens. But also, I wouldn't just restrict it to public property, because there's a lot of churches and other schools and other locations where there's space. There's weedy lawn as sort of the default land management care. So anywhere that occurs and there's access to water and people, food could be grown. There's lots of details in terms of making sure that food safety is followed and getting lease agreements and all those kinds of things signed. But if there's a will, there's a way. And I would say it'd be smart of us to take stock of what's out there now, public and private property, and make sure that we're leaving enough land aside for gardening, but really more importantly, like serious food production in small-scale urban areas. Sure, it has like a better ecological footprint than the standard farming that we rely on, but also just the community building and the public health aspects of people gardening, sharing food together is really pretty powerful.
Yeah, we were just talking to Bob Hatton of the Fruit Tree Project about, you know, neighbors sharing the harvest.
Yeah, so, well, I like Bob, and I love the Portland Fruit Tree Project. It's an awesome example of how to figure out all these details so that the surplus can be shared.
And building neighborliness at the same time you're helping people get access to food.
Well, that's the case. And then, you know, those folks, when they're out doing the harvesting, they're getting exercise. Some of them are even riding on their bikes for the harvest parties. So, you know, people doing weight-bearing exercise in the name of food is a really good thing, in my view.
Or sneak up on that stuff. That's great.
Exactly.
So do you think there's a real potential for gardening in the metro area to respond to the hunger problem we have?
Well, yeah, there's the hunger problem in our local area. There's the global hunger problem. I would say it's more of a food distribution problem than a production problem necessarily.
I've read that.
But certainly fresh produce is important for everyone to have.
Right.
And providing folks with access to that, I think it certainly there's lots of room for more food production to occur. Figuring out the economics of it and making it worth people's time to do that is one thing. You know, community spirit goes a really long way, but still it's very, very hard for people to make a living growing food in an urban farm, let alone a larger holding outside of town.
You know, OSU Extension is just really remarkable about the numbers of things it does. That funding comes, is it all state supported, or do you get grants and things as well?
Great question. So OSU, yeah, they're my salary is more or less funded by the state. And then I do get lots of grants and contracts and things like that to administer the Master Gardener program, to do our Beginning Urban Farmer program, which I described a little bit earlier. There's also 4-H, there's forestry, and so on. So all of us as OSU Extension agents, we're empowered to go find money to make it happen in our programs.
Right. Sounds familiar.
Yes.
Well, I'm getting all my questions answered. If you'd like to ask a question and get it answered, 503-231-8187.
Yes, please.
Okay, this is Tammy in the air room. I have a couple
of
questions. Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good, nice to have you here, Weston.
Thanks.
I am not the only person who seems to have this problem with zucchinis.
Yeah.
You know, I have an abundant crop this year, which is very satisfying.
Right.
However, I always get a number of those little shriveled up yellow ones that are, yeah, I just have to clip them off and throw them as far as I can throw them.
What's going on there?
What is that about?
Well, zucchini is definitely the gift that keeps on giving, and it's good to hear you're still excited about them, because I know other folks who are putting them on their neighbor's doorstep and running away.
Of course.
With those little shrunken zucchinis, so that's a pollination failure. So that particular squash blossom didn't get pollinated.
Okay, because I can tell when they're going to shrivel when they're just like, you know, 3/4 inch long.
Yeah.
Not a Lyme problem.
No, it sounds like a pollination disorder. And as long as you're getting plenty of other fruit, you're okay. They produce a lot of blossoms. You know, if you catch it early enough, you might be able to eat that blossom before it starts to shrivel up.
Okay. And a related to Lyme, anyway.
Sure.
You are suggesting planting the cover crop in the fall, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so how do I, if I know I need to add lime to the soil.
Yeah.
So how do I coordinate lime introduction with planting my cover crop?
You could go ahead and add the lime right before you seed the cover crop. And then during the winter, the lime will work its way down into the soil. The cover crop will grow. You're not adding enough at any one time to affect the growth of a crop, especially cover crops, which are pretty durable.
Great. Okay, well, I can see there's a call coming in. Maybe it's somebody else with a question. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure thing.
Okay.
Okay, well, I have one more question since I'm here.
You're here.
I have these Sungold tomatoes that are about 6 feet tall, but they don't have many tomatoes on them.
So if you have a big spindly plant and you're not getting a lot of blossoms, you may be over fertilized with nitrogen fertilizer. They really need the phosphorus and potassium to be able to set fruit well too. So that could be the problem. If you do have some fruit on it, like I mentioned earlier, pretty quick here, you could give it a haircut, trim off all the flowers that don't have fruit developing, and then that way the plant will be able to ripen up those last remaining tomatoes in the next month or so.
I'm getting a lot of green growth, but not even many blossoms.
Not even many blossoms, yeah. So that sounds like probably over-fertilization with nitrogen.
Overzealous nitrogen.
Yeah. Yeah. Nitrogen is something that enough is great, but too much is not a good thing.
Well, we have a question, a caller. Carol, welcome to KBOO Radio.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I'm a senior citizen, and I'm growing cannabis for the first time in my backyard because I have a lot of arthritis pain. And they're doing really well. I'm growing them in big pots. But after I harvest, can you carry on over the winter? How does that work?
You know, Carol,
can you keep the plant going?
Well, so through OSU, I'm not really empowered to answer questions about growing cannabis, but I could say that for warm season crops like cannabis, you're going to harvest it, and then that's that for the season. And if you're wanting to grow it again next season as a warm season crop, you'd plant it again in the springtime, late spring.
Okay, so I can't overwinter like ranches that
doesn't sound like it, no. Doesn't sound like it.
No, it wouldn't work.
Any questions about tomatoes?
Oh, you know, I know about tomatoes, and I know that I should keep shut off the water now.
Yeah, shut off the water now for the tomatoes is a great call. That'll encourage those last fruits to ripen up.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Carol. Thank you for your call. We want to thank Weston Miller for coming in today and answering all my questions.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
And introducing us to the Master Gardener Program. Do you want to give us those phone numbers and website addresses again for...
If folks have a question or if they're interested in the Master Gardener training in 2017, metromastergardeners.org is our website address.
So our guests today on the Dirt Bag have been Bob Hatton from the Portland Fruit Tree Project and Weston Miller, who coordinates the Master Gardener program for the metro area with OSU Extension. We want to thank both of those folks for coming in. And we want to thank the marvelous Tammy Dean for engineering and making everything work. So thanks for listening. Happy gardening. Glenn will be back next month with his quiz and all those other things. So thanks again.
Silly, I believe that he can pull us out.
till 1973. Cultivation is my station, and the nation buys my car for me immediately. And holding $60,000, I watch his dumper trucks tip New York's cornflakes in the sea. Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging. Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging. It's alarming how charming it is to be a farming. How calming and farming the effects of the air.
Come over here. To the right-hand speaker.
KBOO's book and record sale is happening August 13th at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street, starting at noon. Find treasures amongst the stacks of donated items while raising money for KBOO, your very own community radio station.
Friction between the stylus and the record produces a force which makes the arm try to swing towards the record center.
Again, that's KBOO's book and record sale, Saturday, August 13th from noon to 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm now standing in the center, and my voice should be located precisely midway between the speakers.
It's just about noon, KBOO Portland. Here comes the noon news, and then jazz follows just after that.
This is KBOO Headline News at noon for Wednesday, August 10th, 2016. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, Senator Alan Bates died unexpectedly on Sunday during a fishing trip. The senator's seat will now be on the ballot in November.
The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality is warning that the area in northwest Portland where Terminal 1 is located has not been approved for human habitation. This might determine whether the terminal could be used in an emergency for the location of a 400-bed homeless shelter.
In national news, during a press conference this week, Donald Trump suggested to his audience that Hillary Clinton could be removed as a threat by his Second Amendment people. This created a firestorm among Clinton supporters who charged Trump with encouraging violence against her. The Trump camp insisted he was merely encouraging support for his election.
Trump announced his